All right. Hello. Hi. As mentioned, my name is Sita. I am new to Beacon, and I am honored to be speaking to you about disability and identity. Up until recent years, I didn't have to think about the impact my disability had on my identity. But I've had to step back and re-examine that. Let me just back up for a second. You might be thinking, hey, well, okay, well, they already told you. But hey, this girl doesn't have a disability. Why is she talking to us about disabilities? Well, let me tell you a well-known secret. Okay, well, well-known secrets are not well-known. They're not secrets. I live with refractory epilepsy, which essentially means that it is a type of epilepsy that is difficult to control, and the severity and frequency of seizures seriously interferes with my quality of life. My epilepsy wasn't always like this, though. I was diagnosed with just regular old epilepsy at the age of 10, and it was under control for till about 21. So I had about 10 to 11 solid years of positive seizure control. I never thought about my seizures at all. Later on, around age 24, I was diagnosed with refractory epilepsy. My, oh my. What did my epilepsy look like before it got out of control? Well, let me paint you a picture of what my average day looked like. I would work 40 hours weeks in the summer. Then I would go to a university in Ottawa, Ontario, during the school year to pursue my Bachelor's of Social Work degree. I went to the gym 5 days a week. And we even work 10 hours a week as someone who helps students with physical disabilities, which is a job I loved. I was the organized one, the one who brought her ridiculously expensive Lululemon pants and shirt along with my running shoes and lunch and Tupperware containers. I wouldn't get home till about 7 p.m., which is where I took my Tupperware store dinner and plopped it onto a plate and sank into my beanbag chair, while enjoying the benefit of our old tenants' television and the people who forgot to turn off the cable. It was great. I was just able to go, go, go. My social life was thriving. And I flitted from one group of people to another. I would go out for coffee, spend a weekend at a friend's family cottage in Quebec for a weekend, and be able to stay up ridiculously late by choice. Since I was in university, I also spent hours in the university. In the library, working hard to understand concepts that I had never come across before. Generally, if I wasn't in the library, I was socializing or in the gym. That was just my norm. Everybody knew I was a gym rat and would come to me for encouragement. You know, like January 1st. Let's go to the gym together. No. All of that working out helped me to blow off steam, so it was vital to my everyday living. Except one day, in October of 2011, everything changed. I was lying in bed on my side facing the wall, and although I had no classes that day, I had a meeting with someone on campus. I kind of had this, like, premonition that something was going to happen. The premonition went something like this. You shouldn't leave your house. Something bad is going to happen. So I canceled my appointment and crawled back into bed. Then it came. The seizure hit me from the tailbone like a bolt of lightning all the way up my back. I was completely panicked. My seizures were generally always in my sleep, so to bear witness to one was terrifying. From then on, I seemed to get caught in a downward spiral of the ongoing seizures. The following year, the seizures got worse and worse, and I found myself stuck in a cycle of seizures and depression. The more seizures I had, the more depressed I got, and that would trigger more seizures. But the thing is, I would just shrug it off as everybody has bad days. I saw every isolated incident as a problem, but be nothing to be too worried about. When I met with my epileptologist, he looked me dead in the eyes and asked me how I got through that semester. Honestly, I have no idea. Well, I have one clue. I'm a Taurus, so that makes me stubborn in nature. Also, for me, quitting is never an option. I must keep going no matter what. This was beneficial for completing my semester, but as a result, my health took a toll. The same year, so that would be 2012, I got a coveted placement with it, which was mandatory for my degree. I was ecstatic because I had the opportunity to work with a caseworker who had clients with mental health issues as well as other issues. Due to my seizures, though, the organization had to let me go, and I was in no other position but to return home for the semester. I was devastated. And additionally, I continued to believe that I would return to university the following semester. You know what? This is where my ideas around acceptance come into play. Acceptance of my epilepsy just wasn't happening. Some who do not have chronic medical conditions may assume that's it's easy to accept that you have a lifelong condition. Sure, it'll be easy to adapt. This is not the case at all. Mm-hmm. Acceptance of a chronic condition kind of makes me think of like the five stages of grief. The first stage is denial and isolation. I wasn't isolated, but I for sure was in denial. I still wanted to go to the gym and work out, and completely shut out other ideas I should be acting differently in order to take care of myself. I was totally fine to go back to school. What was the fuss? The second stage is anger. I can tell you for sure I'm angry. Why did I have to minimize my life from being such a vibrant and social person? Why is it dangerous for me to take the SkyTrain alone? I should be allowed to take the SkyTrain alone. I can no longer go to the gym, work towards running a 10K, and participate in Zumba, because there is that tiny likelihood that, bam, I could land on my face from seizing, which would cause injuries. Living with my type of epilepsy has caused severe accidents. One time I fell face first onto big brick flooring, which caused me to break off half my tooth. Can't believe I kind of shared that with everybody, but whatever. My worst accident of all was last year, almost exactly a year ago today. It'll be tomorrow. So it's kind of interesting that that happened that way. So anyways, I was holding a travel mug of tea in my hand while I was lying in bed. I had, like, my pajamas on, I had, like, my house coat on, I was under the covers, like, I get really cold, Nada was cold, so I, like, needed to get really nice and warm, and I was like, yeah, like, I had, like, a big travel mug of tea, so I was watching TV, and I think it's something in the TV show triggered me, because while I was sipping the tea, it happened just as I flipped open the travel mug, and then I started to sip the tea. And then, as a result, I received superficial second-degree burns all over my upper torso, well, on the right side, including my arm and wrist. I needed my bandages to be changed on a daily basis for about 4 months. I spent the final semester of my university degree doped up on prescribed morphine, and Tylenol arthritis. It was amazing that I made it through. The burns are healing, but it has taken a very long time for them to get to the point where they are not itchy or uncomfortable. Okay, anyways, a little bit, you know. Back to the five stages of grief. The next stage is bargaining. Bargaining takes the form of, if only I hadn't stayed out so late. If only I'd managed my stress better. You're asking for a better deal than what you got. It's like expecting a limo and then ending up with like a Ford Escort. Sorry, Mom. The next stage is either depression or anxiety, which I have experienced both. You're depressed that your life has changed. You're scared about leaving your house because something could go wrong. I get worried about meeting new people in case I seize in front of them. No one wants to be pigeonholed as the person who has seizures. Plus, when I have seizures, I just drop. Maybe I had a stroke. Maybe I fainted. Maybe I have diabetes. Like, I don't know. No one knows unless I have told them ahead of time. If you tell a person, you never know if they truly want to be your friend. Thankfully, I have very supportive friends who have never judged me on having seizures, and they know that's kind of just like the package deal when it comes to being my friend. So we've talked about the anxiety. So in addition to the anxiety, there's the depression. Depression in the five stages of grief looks a little like this. No medication is working. No one is ever going to figure anything out. I'm going to be a recluse for the rest of my life. It's a very complex depression because although there are things that you can do to help manage your depression, it's very contingent on my physical health. Finally, and although I thought I have gotten there before, but haven't yet, is acceptance. You know that your chronic illness is there to stay, but you are still you despite all of it. You give your best effort to live life to its fullest, yet you accept what you are able to do. Acceptance does not necessarily mean you're okay with your diagnosis. You have learned to accept your new reality. Even though I would love to erase epilepsy from my life, I have found that it has become a way for me to relate to people. One of my favorite social work researchers, Brené Brown, has done a fair amount of research on the topic of vulnerability and connection. Through her research, she has found that vulnerability, you know, that raw, open part of you, is what connects you to others. When my seizures came back with a vengeance in 2011, I found something to be really interesting. People who were in my social network, but I didn't really talk with much, kind of started to come out of the woodworks. They wanted to connect. So sometimes by telling people that I have epilepsy, it also starts a dialogue about what it is and how it affects me. It stimulates conversations about other people's disabilities and mental health issues. People want to be educated. They want to know how they can help. I think by telling people about my epilepsy helps people to see an aspect of myself that is truly authentic. It is a testament to my own struggles and the strengths that I've had to gather through the hard days. This also helps me to empathize with their difficulties as well. I'm still struggling with figuring out a happy medium of how much to talk about my epilepsy and seizures. I know my friends are concerned about my health, but talking about it too much can be depressing, especially when you feel like your health was just getting back on track. You know, people will ask you, oh, how are you? How many seizure-free days are you at? And I was like, oh, like I'm a month and a half. And then it's like, oh, I had like another one. So it's like kind of always this concept of just getting back on track, just getting healthy again. I just try to be honest and be upfront about my health when they ask. Friends extend themselves to support me when I need it. And although I'm very good at asking for help, I'm still learning to seek support when I need it. Seizures are very complicated, as they're not well understood by mainstream society. A person who is having a seizure may appear to be drunk or on drugs. Public education about epilepsy and seizures in general would help to make people living with epilepsy live happier and more fulfilling lives, as there would be no judgment and the shame of having a seizure would not exist. Additionally, If everybody knew seizure first aid, I wouldn't have to worry about people sticking wallets in my mouth. You know, just like throw the cash at me. No, just kidding. Ultimately, at this point, I cannot separate my identity from my epilepsy. My life is so wrapped up in doctor's appointments, new medications, and ways of treating the epilepsy, as well as the side effects of epilepsy, such as the kissing cousins, better known as depression and anxiety. Like, kissing cousins is disgusting. One day, I hope to get back on track to where I do not have to think about my epilepsy so much, and it would not be something that I would have to disclose on a regular basis. For now, though, there is hope, and I will never give up fighting. In addition to having epilepsy, I am an aspiring social worker, I write a blog, I have a puppy, and I am a very hard worker. In the future, I hope to be an advocate for people with disabilities. I believe that I have a very strong voice, which could be of use for people who do not have the voice to express their needs. I have been fortunate in that I have worked with people with disabilities in a variety of capacities, such as in group homes, working with students with physical disabilities, and an academic mentor for university students with learning disabilities and mental health issues. I've learned there's still a lot of progress that needs to happen in order for individuals with disabilities to truly live fulfilling lives. I believe that everybody has something positive to contribute to our world. So if we can give them the resources to do so, that would be golden. I also just want to, you know, pause for a moment and say thank you so much for the beautiful decorations. Yes. Well, also the purple, you know, as some people don't know, purple is the epilepsy color. So it's kind of like perfect. Exactly. So I just want to say thank you so much for listening today, and I hope you found today's talk enlightening. Please feel free to ask me any questions. Thank you.